Today is Tuesday, March 17th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. The world continues to enact stricter guidelines to prevent the spread of COVID-19.
Avoid gathering in groups of more than 10 people.
Plus, Americans cautiously go to the polls.
Voting isn't really the major concern for most people right now in the middle of this emergency.
And Hollywood technology comes to your smartphone. Those stories and more are next. The number of people who contracted the COVID-19 virus outside China is now greater than the cases of the disease in China, where the novel coronavirus was first identified. The coronavirus COVID-19 global cases system run by Johns Hopkins University near Washington, D.C., is tracking at least 182,000 cases around the world. Europe is now the center of the global pandemic. Italy is the hardest hit. But when adding Spain, Germany, France, Switzerland, Britain, the Netherlands, Norway, Sweden, Belgium, Austria, and Denmark, that accounts for over 62,000 cases. Now, to put that into perspective, China has just over 81,000 cases. The escalating threat from COVID-19 is forcing governments to take action. The Philippine Stock Exchange has shut down operations indefinitely, the first stock exchange in the world to stop trading amid the economic fallout caused by the novel coronavirus pandemic. The decision to close the exchange comes as the capital of Manila has been placed under a virtual lockdown, and it is in reaction to daily losses sustained in the global financial markets as everyday life grinds to a halt in practically every country and major city in an effort to halt the spread of the virus. Other Asian markets ended mostly up for the day. European shares retreated after an initial bounce as the damage to companies and economies across the globe grows and keeps financial markets on edge. U.S. markets are up in early trading after losing about 12% in value Monday. This is after U.S. President Donald Trump announced that for the next 15 days, the United States government wants Americans to avoid gathering in groups of more than 10. Schooling should be at home, and discretionary travel should be avoided. VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman has the details.
The president in the White House briefing room also said people should not patronize bars or restaurants and not unnecessarily socialize.
As we combat the virus, each and every one of us has a critical role to play in stopping the spread and transmission of the virus.
As the president spoke, the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed down 13%, its worst performance since the start of the coronavirus crisis. Asked about the plunge, Trump said markets will boom again once the pandemic passes, but he acknowledged in the meantime the economy could go into a recession. Steve Herman, VOA News at the White House.
A new Gallup poll showed some 60% of Americans are now very or somewhat worried that they or a family member will be exposed to the coronavirus, up from 36% in February, while confidence in the government's ability to respond has fallen sharply. Poland's government was under quarantine Tuesday after one minister tested positive for the novel coronavirus as authorities introduced sweeping measures to combat the spread of the disease. The European Union's external borders will be closed to non-essential travel for 30 days as of Tuesday to fight the spread of COVID-19, while France is following Italy and Spain in imposing a nationwide lockdown for at least 15 days. Lisa Bryant has more.
The countrywide school shutdown will last at least 15 days for all French educational establishments, from kindergartens to universities. It counts among the most drastic of the new measures French President Emmanuel Macron announced in a nationwide address to fight close to 3,000 coronavirus cases here. Here insert Macron act in French fade under. Macron called on elderly citizens with health problems to stay home, announced help for businesses to cope with coronavirus-related losses, and urged bosses to let their employees work at home when possible. Major events are canceled, but municipal elections taking place over the next two Sundays will go ahead for now. Macron called the battery of prevention measures a way to gain time, so hospitals do not become become overloaded. He urged civic responsibility. Here insert Macron Act 3 in French fade under. In an apparent response to the Trump administration's temporary travel ban on most of Europe, Macron said nationalism is not the answer to the coronavirus outbreak since it respects no borders. He also called for a united and strong European response to deal with the virus and its financial fallout beyond fiscal stimulus measures announced Thursday by the European Central Bank. Here insert ambient of Renzi, in French, fade under. France has one of Europe's highest coronavirus caseloads, although its numbers are still a fraction of those in neighboring Italy. However, speaking on French radio Friday, former Italian minister Matteo Renzi said the nationwide lockdown Italy now faces risks becoming the rule across Europe. He urged France to move quickly to take Italy's path. Reactions to Macron's announcements have been mixed, including, not surprisingly, from his political opponents. The French Employers Union saluted them. Here insert a Crochet Act in French, fade under. Stéphane Crochet, General Secretary of the SEUNSA Teachers Union, told French TV that the nationwide school shutdown was unexpected. French authorities, he said, had previously insisted that wouldn't happen. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
U.S. health officials say the first human trial has begun to test an experimental coronavirus vaccine as scientists race to find treatments for the pandemic. Scientists at the Kaiser Permanente Washington Research Institute in Seattle give their first shots Monday to a small group of healthy people. The U.S. National Institutes of Health said the trial would involve 45 healthy adult volunteers between the ages of 18 and 55 who would be given the experimental vaccine over a six-week period. It is one of many studies of experimental vaccines that will take place around the world in the coming months to try and find a way to protect people against COVID-19. Scientists say a vaccine will likely not be available for widespread use for at least a year, as all potential vaccines must go through several phases of testing to prove that they work and are safe. Elsewhere on Monday, Colombia enacted a complete ban on entries of non-residents, but tens of thousands of people from neighboring Venezuela cross into Colombia each day seeking food and medical supplies. In addition, more than 1.7 million Venezuelans are living in Colombia after fleeing economic and political upheaval in their home country. For more on the potential effect of Colombia's decision on Venezuelan migrants, VOA's Jason Patikin spoke earlier to journalist Megan Janetsky in Medellin.
It was a closure that we expected because Colombia is also facing a medical crisis, especially on the borders, in large part to the Venezuela migration. Their hospitals are very, very overwhelmed. So like Ivan Duque last night said, we are facing one of the biggest challenges in our history, which is pretty significant for a country with half of century civil war behind them. But I think the scariest thing about the border being closed with Venezuela is just the humanitarian effects and migrants being pushed into clandestine means of, you know, surviving.
So obviously there's been a huge migration of people moving from Venezuela into Colombia due to the political unrest and the humanitarian situation in Venezuela. How might this closure of borders affect those people?
Thousands of people leave the country every single day, and many more, I would say about 40, 50,000 people cross by land to get supplies like food, medicine, soap, even like basic medical services in Colombia because Venezuela is so collapsed at this moment. So that's the context. Like a lot of people are already relying on these borders. What everyone pretty much expects is that more desperate migrants will be pushed into these things called which are informal pathways along the border where they have to get smuggled over. And those can be very dangerous. And a lot of times it's migrants that are then victimized.
That sounds like there's really not a way to actually close the border. It sounds like it's just closing the official crossings, but the border is in no way sealed. It's not actually something that will stop people from coming from Venezuela into Colombia.
No, no. And that, I mean, you see that everywhere. There's so many people just flowing over. And you even see that with the illegality, the aspects of the border with Colombia. You know, there are a lot of armed groups that run along the Colombia-Venezuela border in between the two countries because it's kind of just a porous and fairly large border. So while you can create these migratory restrictions, people are going to keep coming.
What does that mean for the health of migrants and refugees who are already in Colombia?
People are already pretty much unable to get food and basic supplies like hand sanitizer, and like it's really, really hard to self-isolate. Like if you look at, for instance, Venezuelans across the region, many are like homeless, living on the streets, living in shelters, living in homes with like 12 different people. It just makes the challenges for these people so much higher.
And what about for Venezuela? Venezuela is obviously suffering itself quite a bit due to all of the political unrest and upheaval over the last few years with this border being closed. What will that mean for potentially getting medical supplies into that country?
I have met so many people that rely on Colombia and even other countries to bring back supplies to sustain their family. If it continues in the pace that it's going at in terms of closures, it's just going to be a lot harder and have a lot more negative implications for an already desperate population in Venezuela.
That was Megan Janetsky, a journalist in Medellin, Colombia. She spoke to our own Jason Patinkin. There is significantly more COVID-19 related information available at voanews.com. Turkish, French, German, and British leaders are holding a video summit to address the migration crisis. The summit comes after Turkey opened its European borders to refugees, saying it can no longer cope with over 3 million refugees, mainly from Syria. Ankara's move comes as it fears a new exodus from Syria as government forces prepare to seize the last rebel stronghold in Idlib. The video summit is expected to discuss both Idlib and Turkey's European Union refugee deal. For more, I spoke with reporter Dorian Jones in Istanbul.
Well, I think that the discussion will focus on this crisis on the Greek and Bulgarian border with Turkey, with the migrants. Over the last few weeks, there have been thousands, tens of thousands of migrants trying to enter into Greece, primarily after Turkey declared its open door policy to Europe for refugees and migrants in its country. I think that will be a key area of discussion, whereas on Ankara's side, they will be pressing for the re-examination, a new deal, a migration refugee deal with the European Union. There was a deal in 2015 that effectively ended a mass exodus of refugees into Europe. A million or so people entered. Following that deal, those numbers drastically fell. But Ankara says the terms of that deal weren't fulfilled on the European side, and particularly the question of money. They're looking for around 3 billion more euros. And they also want a new deal going forward. Now, that will be another area of talk, and also will be the fate of the situation in Idlib, this Syrian province, the last that's held by rebels, that's currently under siege by Damascus forces. There's a very tentative ceasefire, but Ankara realizes that ceasefire isn't likely to be permanent. They are looking for support for their idea of creating a safe haven there, protected by a no-fly zone. Ankara will be looking to its talks of these key NATO members to back that idea going forward, which they feel will prevent a new exodus of refugees into Turkey.
Speaking of refugees, this is all happening under the umbrella of the worldwide pandemic of the coronavirus, COVID-19. What concerns are the parties discussing in terms of humanitarian relief?
Well, I think that puts a new dimension on already an extremely difficult situation. There is the concern, particularly in Idlib, that if this virus spreads, that can create another humanitarian crisis on top of the already existing one, with already very little health infrastructure, and what there is has been targeted by Damascus forces. The theory is that given the fact that there is around a million refugees already on Turkey's border, if the virus took hold there, then the situation would be catastrophic. There already warnings from the UN there of that threat. So I think that UNCRA will be using that as another argument for creating this safe haven that will allow some kind of medical infrastructure to be created there to prevent that catastrophe, which is how UNCRA would describe this, and also many international aid agencies. On top of that, the fact that these refugees seeking to enter Europe is another concern, that the fear that many of them possibly could be carrying the virus, given the fact that quite a lot of them are Iranian refugees, and Iran does have a major problem with the virus as well. So this will all add, and I think focus the minds on resolving this wider problem of refugees, that given the fact that these people will find it more difficult to access help, they are seen as a primary concern of many aid agencies. So I think that this is another factor. And I think that we are seeing already the situation on the Greek and Bulgarian border. That situation does seem to be resolving itself. We're getting reports it's much calmer. There's even reports that buses are taking the refugees away from the border back into Turkey's main cities. That possibly is a gesture by Ankara as ahead of these talks. So I think that that is another primary fear and concern among those talking today in resolving this migration crisis.
That was Dorian Jones in Istanbul. The internationally condemned ritual of female genital mutilation is practiced in at least 92 countries, according to a new study released by three advocacy groups. Despite a decline in its prevalence in recent decades, there are still millions of girls around the world subjected to the painful and dangerous practice. The UN estimates that more than 200 million girls have undergone the ritual in 32 countries in recent decades. The U.S. government considers female genital mutilation a serious human rights abuse and a form of gender-based violence and child abuse. In 2015, U.N. members set eradication of FGM as one of their sustainable development goals for 2030. But a 2018 United Nations Population Fund report warned that if current population trends hold, at least 68 million more girls will face FGM by 2030, with the number of victims rising to 4.6 million per year. And still to come.
Voting isn't really the major concern for most people right now in the middle of this emergency.
You're listening to VOA News.
March 17th, 461 AD. St. Patrick, Ireland's patron saint, for whom St. Patrick's Day is named, dies in the Irish village of Saul. Other authorities say Patrick's death happened on this day, but more than three decades later, in 493 AD. 2003. President George W. Bush gives an ultimatum to Iraq's dictator Saddam Hussein and his two sons.
Saddam Hussein and his sons must leave Iraq within 48 hours. Their refusal to do so will result in military conflict, commenced at a time of our choosing.
Days later, the American-led invasion of Iraq begins, toppling Saddam's brutal regime from power. Today in history, March 17th, Mike Gracia, The Associated Press.
Tuesday in primary elections to pick the Democratic Party's presidential candidate, despite worries about the coronavirus outbreak that forced one state to postpone its voting. Going into Tuesday, former Vice President Joe Biden leads Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders 898 to 745 in pledged delegates. VOA's Kane Faribault is covering the primaries, and I asked him how things are going.
Ohio, Illinois, Florida, and Arizona. However, in the late hours of Monday night into Tuesday, Ohio is postponing its primary election, so that's leaving voters going to the polls now in only three states, Illinois, Arizona, and Florida. You know what? I think I said Chicago instead of Florida, didn't I, in the first part of that? Sorry.
Go ahead and just start over again. It's all right.
It's one of those days, Steve.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, when the week began, there was meant to be voting in four states, and that would have been Ohio, Illinois, Arizona, and Florida. But in the late hours of Monday into Tuesday morning, and really throughout the weekend, officials in Ohio have been trying to delay or postpone Ohio's primary. And Ohio's primary, at least as it stands right now, is not occurring. But the primary elections in the other three states, Illinois, Florida, and Arizona, are underway.
You're out there in Illinois, and you went out to polling places today. What did you see? And are voters
coming out in the normal numbers, or is the concern about the COVID-19 coronavirus affecting voter output?
Well, the concern had already taken hold in really the week leading up to the primary election here in Illinois. There were many polling precincts or polling locations inside nursing homes in my particular community, and those were some of the first polling locations that had to be moved elsewhere in order to maintain safe distances from some of the elderly population who are most susceptible to the COVID-19 virus. So there's been a little bit of confusion as to where some of the polling locations have shifted to in order to keep them out of nursing homes and areas where the elderly or the most at risk tend to congregate. So that's started it out. When I went to the polls this morning, I'm in an area right now that does not yet have a confirmed case of COVID-19 in the state of Illinois. So, but turnout here, I would say, is we were among some of the only voters at our polling location in our precincts. When I looked at the registration, at least in the ballot box, when we put our ballot in the box, it looked like there might have been 21 voters in my precinct before us. I think that's down a little bit, but I think the real understanding of how this is impacting voter turnout won't be known until we start to see a lot more of the real numbers trickle in here towards the end of the day.
If we take a look forward, there has been some discussion of whether or not there will be political conventions this summer to formally choose the nominees for the Democrat and Republican parties. Have voters expressed any kind of concern about what impact the coronavirus may have on the electoral process?
It's already changing this electoral process dramatically. I mean, neither right now, it's really down to a two-way race between former Vice President Joe Biden and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders for the Democratic nomination. President Donald Trump is the presumed Republican nominee. Right now, neither Biden nor Sanders can really get out and campaign in person. And for Sanders in particular, large rallies were sort of a hallmark of his campaign, at least leading up to this COVID-19 emergency. He can't do that anymore, and he is the candidate trailing Joe Biden. So if he is going to increase voter turnout at any primary election in the weeks ahead, rallying his voters and getting them out to vote for him is something he needs to do. And he previously had done that by these big rallies and motivating people in these large crowds.
That was VOA's Cain Faribault. A trial opened in the Netherlands on Monday of three Russians and a Ukrainian over the downing of Malaysia Airlines Flight 17 in 2014. Reuters' Lauren Anthony reports.
The trial of four fugitive suspects over the downing of Malaysian Airlines Flight 17 started in Amsterdam on Monday, more than 5 years after the plane came down in Ukraine. Prosecutors say three Russians and a Ukrainian will be tried in absentia, charged with murder. They're accused of helping to arrange the Russian missile system used to shoot down the passenger jet. The suspects, still at large, are believed to be in Russia. MH17 was traveling from Amsterdam to Kuala Lumpur in 2014 when it was hit by a surface-to-air missile. All 298 passengers and crew were killed. On Sunday, some of the victims' families protested outside the Russian embassy in The Hague and put out empty chairs to represent those who died.
The idea of the action is to make perfectly clear to the Russian state that they have to cooperate with the investigation. You know, up till now, the Russians obstructed the investigation, or at least they didn't cooperate with the investigation of the joint investigation team.
The defendants, Russians Sergei Dubinsky, Oleg Pulatov and Igor Gherkin, and Ukrainian Leonid Karchenko, had senior positions in pro-Russian militias in eastern Ukraine back in 2014. They are presumed innocent until proven guilty. Gherkin has said rebels were not responsible for the plane's downing and declined further comment. The aircraft's downing led to sanctions against Russia by the European Union and heightened tensions between Russia and Western powers who blame it for the disaster.
That was Reuters reporter Lauren Anthony. Iraq's military said Tuesday two rockets struck a base south of Baghdad hosting U.S.-led coalition troops and NATO trainers. The statement did not include any mention of casualties. The rockets hit the Basmaya base, where there are coalition troops from Spain, as part of the mission to combat the Islamic State militant group. A rocket attack last week at Camp Taji, north of the Iraqi capital, killed two U.S. service members and a British medic, while wounding 14 others. The U.S. has blamed such attacks on Iranian proxies in Iraq. U.S. forces carried out retaliatory strikes Thursday and Friday against weapons depots of the Iranian-backed group Kataib Hezbollah. And that's going to do it for us today. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a great day.